Welcome to Thundercast, Thunder Tech's podcast where we give you our take on what's new in marketing, what's cool, what's lame, and why you should care.
Hi there. Welcome to Thundercast, Thunder Tech's regular podcast. I'm Craig Israel, creative director of Thunder Tech, and I'm joined today with Justin Smith.
Hey, everybody. What's happening?
UX manager and regular co-host, and special guest star today, Matt Stevens. The manager of our multimedia services.
Hello.
What's up, Matt?
Matt's here for a very special reason, because he just recently returned from the NAB show in Vegas. But before we get into that, and it's excited, I know, let's talk about Vegas for a minute. I have been to Vegas once. What about you guys? Have you been to the desert?
So I've never been out west, never been to Vegas, I'm dying to go. People take me really seriously, but I love cheesy things, and I feel like Vegas is just like the heart of cheese in America. So I'm kind of dying to get out there and just like live it up.
So Matt, you've been to Vegas for NAB several times, right?
Yeah, this is my fourth time for NAB and my fifth time in Vegas. The first time was with my family, like when I was like 12, though. So
what's Vegas like as a 12-year-old?
It was terrible. I hated it. I mean, I got to spend a lot of time by the pool, but that was about it.
So the one and only time I've been to Vegas, it was with my wife's family, and I don't enjoy gambling, but they're big gamblers. Oh, man. So it was a lot of me sitting at the blackjack table dumbfounded, because blackjack is basically math, and math is terrible. And it was my brother-in-law saying, oh, you should get another card. I'm like, oh, hold. Oh, get another card. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't enjoy it.
But you made tons of money, right?
No, No, that did not happen.
Actually, out of the 4 years I've been there for NAB, I've not gambled 1 cent.
Of course you haven't, Matt. Not when Thunder Tech is paying for you to be there. Wink, wink. I think we all know what you're saying.
I honestly haven't.
Did you see a show?
No. Well, I saw some DJs while I was there, but that was...
That counts, right? Yeah. I think that's a show.
Yeah. One time I was out there, I saw Penn and Teller, and it was fairly amazing. And then the coolest part is they came out and just talked with the audience after the show. And Teller, the one who doesn't talk, totally talks. I mean,
no.
I guess in the back of my head, I understood that he had the ability to speak, but he just wasn't shy about it. He came out and shook our hands, and it was a super nice guy.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd like to hang with those guys.
That's cool. I wonder if he was at NAB.
Did you see Penn or Teller?
I did not see them there, but there were, I think, I could be wrong on this, but like 25,000 people there.
I read online like 90,000 or
something. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's way
I heard 2 million.
2 million people.
2 million at the Bellagio.
But not Penn or Teller.
So... So let's talk about NAB, the real reason that Matt was out there. So NAB is the, National Association of Broadcasters?
That's correct.
But it makes it sound like it's like a bunch of TV newsmen out there, but that's not at all what the show is.
It is, but it's more than that. Really, anybody that works in video production can get, or audio production can get something out of it. All of the big manufacturers of software and all the gear that we use every day, is there exhibiting their latest and greatest products. There's also a lot of sessions you can go to and hear people speak. Like I saw Adam Epstein, the lead editor for Saturday Night Live's film unit, and he had some pretty interesting things to say. Got to see the cinematographer for Budapest Hotel. He was actually a little boring, to be honest, but... in general, it's a good show to go to. It is still a broadcaster show, so there's still all like the big broadcast trucks and whatnot. But even people that do what we do still can get stuff out of it.
What kind of sessions are there? Like, what was the Adam Epstein thing?
He was basically talking about his process. For SNL, they only get like 3 days to put together those little basically mini movies. That are highly produced, and it's really kind of amazing that they do what they do. And he said if they're finished 5 minutes before air, they kick back and have a beer. So that's like we're done early. Because usually he said there's actually 1 week where they were pushing it out 30 seconds before air. And even then, they still sometimes keep working on it after it airs for the West Coast. They'll perfect it. And if there's any, like, you know, little extra color correction they want to do, they'll finish that up. And you'll actually see a little bit of a difference from the East Coast broadcast to the West Coast and web feed.
So did they talk budget at all?
They didn't talk budget, but there's, I think he said about, typically about 30 people on the crew that works on those. He's the only editor, but he still sends things out to a colorist and a sound editor. So it's not, although he does a lot of stuff on his own, he still has like other people helping him out. He said just working with a good producers that know what they're doing and just are on the ball, it really helps things to go smoothly because everybody knows what the goal is and what's expected every week.
Those tend to be a little bit less timely than like most of the skits on SNL. Like they're kind of just like canned. I wonder if they write them the week of.
They do. Yeah, they do write them the week of.
Do they?
They don't get the script until Wednesday night, and they do that on purpose because they want it to be timely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. Most of them aren't like ripped from the headlines. I assume they were canned weeks in advance, but apparently not.
No, it's really amazing what they can do in only a few days.
Wow, kudos, SNL. I wish the rest of your show was funny. I might watch. So one of the cool things you got to do when you were out at NAB was fly some new drones, right?
Yeah, not necessarily new ones. The one I got to fly was...
Some old drone.
Has been out, but... so normally I when I go to NAB, it's, you know, Monday through Thursday, and that's generally when the show is, but this year I went a little early and did a field trip on Saturday where they took us to the Nelson Ghost Town. It's about 40-45 minutes outside of Vegas, and they gave us kind of a crash course on drones and how to fly them.
Crash course, really? Best choice of words, maybe?
there weren't any major crashes. There's some minor crashes.
So in these drones, how many missiles did each drone contain?
None.
None?
No missiles.
Then your field trip is suddenly much less exciting to me.
They did have cameras, though.
So we're not calling them drones anymore, right? Is that the deal?
You could still call them drones. Kind of the more technical appropriate term is unmanned aerial systems.
Nobody's going to call them unanimous.
Yeah, you can still call them systems,
right? I can't even say it. UAS, if it was like UFO or something, I might be on board, but...
Unmanned, what could the F stand for?
Photographic.
That's it.
Because that's how you spell photo.
Good, okay. Unmanned photographic operationals.
All right, so tell us more about your field trip.
So yeah, we got there. The first thing they did was they basically, you know, tried to impress us with a little flight show of three different drones. One was the one that we actually flew, which was the DJI Phantom 2, fairly common one that people use these days, as well as a DJI Inspire 1 and some new thing that they were just debuting that I can't remember what it was called. It was kind of a newer product, but it was basically what they called a heavy lifter. It was on an octocopter, so it had was that six or eight blades.
How big are these things?
They range anywhere from the palm of your hand to, you know, maybe 3 feet tall. Depends on what they're carrying. That kind of third one I mentioned was meant to carry huge cinema cameras that weigh probably 20, 30, 40 pounds. So if you're flying, you know, a GoPro, you need something much smaller than if you're flying an Arri Alexa, which is a huge cinema camera. After that, they split us into four or five groups, and each group had two instructors and two DJI Phantom 2s, and they kind of went through step by step how to calibrate them. The first thing you do is what they call a calibration dance, where you basically hold the drone out in front of you, and you turn around with it, and then you rotate it 90 degrees, and then you turn some more.
Do you think this was really required, or were they just screwing with you guys?
They said it was required to calibrate the compass.
So you were telling me that the reason you got to calibrate it is because these drones have a failsafe where they'll return home.
So that was to calibrate the compass, but every time you turn it on, it needs to acquire a GPS signal. Similar to, you know, if you boot up your GPS on your phone, it might take a second to acquire a signal from the satellites. Same thing with them. When you first boot them up, they need to find the satellites and figure out where they are. If you skip that, they're going to think their home location was where they were manufactured, which is somewhere in China. So the reason this is important is there is a failsafe on it. If it loses radio contact with your controller, or say you just freak out and turn your controller off, it will automatically return to where it took off, its home position, as you call it. And if you don't let it figure out where that is, it's going to think home is in China. So it will try to fly to China. It won't make it. It doesn't have enough power, but it will try to go to China.
So I guess this is good news that if you lose the signal, or I don't know, your batteries die in your controller, this thing doesn't just fall from the sky. It'll return to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit more about the drone you flew. I mean, it has a camera on it, right?
Right.
And I mean, are you like seeing a live feed of, like, how do you operate this thing?
So, yeah, you do see a live feed. The one we flew in particular works with a smartphone app. So the controller actually has a little clip that you can put your smartphone in, and you see a video feed of what the camera sees on your phone. So in general, you're probably going to fly these within line of sight, so you can also just look up and see where it is. But you can also see what the camera sees and use that video feed to control to control your shot.
And the camera's mobile, right? So you're controlling the camera angle and the drone at the same time?
Yeah, and this one in particular only had tilt. So you can tilt it up and down, and then any other movement, you have to actually move the entire vehicle. One thing I should note is that if you kind of leave the joysticks in the center, it just hovers in place. So if you want to just, you know, get a shot that was just like from high up, like as if you had a camera on a tall pole, you can fly it up and just leave it there.
So would there be like a jiggle in the camera, or how smooth is it?
They're actually pretty smooth. If you look up at it, it looks like it's shaking like crazy. That's just because it's struggling to stay in place. But if you look at the video feed, it's fairly stable.
Hmm. So you were piloting a drone. What are the current regulations on flying a drone? I mean, are you now a certified drone pilot because you took some sort of class?
So, no, I'm not. And actually, technically right now, the FAA says, the regulations say that you need a private pilot's license to fly these.
Like to fly people in a plane?
Yes. They don't distinguish between a manned aircraft and an unmanned aircraft.
What about a paper plane? I mean, why is this so much different than
that? Actually, technically it isn't. But they realize that's not...
Or I mean like remote control helicopters and stuff? Yeah. So you can just buy at Toys R Us?
You need to be a licensed pilot to fly a toy helicopter around?
Technically speaking, yes. But they realize...
I'm sorry, I thought this was America.
But they're not going to... So one of the things one of our instructors said is he's actually talked to people at the FAA, and they've flat out told him, they're not going to go after you unless you're being reckless. In fact, from what I've heard on this field trip, they've only gone after one person, and they were, you know, being pretty stupid with the way they're flying it.
So define reckless.
So one thing you don't want to do is fly over a big crowd of people. These things, even the small ones, are deadly if they fall from the sky. One, you know, just that amount of force falling from that height can kill someone. I'm not joking about that. And there's the batteries in them can also explode if they leak. So if the battery, you know, gets a hole in it upon impact, if it crashes, there could be a significant explosion. So you don't want to fly over a big crowded area where, you know, you're not going to be able to tell people to get out of the way if something goes wrong. That said, they are fairly safe and they're fairly reliable.
They can kill you, but they're safe.
I mean, in terms of like the reliability, you know, they will. If, like, for example, it's losing power, it will just start returning home. You can override it, but it, you know, it they kind of have safety features built in. It's not like they're just going to fall out of the sky. That said, you know, things do go wrong.
Sure.
You don't want to fly over 400 feet. That just kind of gets into a different class of airspace. You don't want to record somebody without their consent. That violates privacy laws. You're not allowed to fly within 5 miles of an airport without notifying air traffic control and getting their permission. If one of these had a head-on collision with even a Boeing 747, it can take that Boeing out of the sky.
Nice.
No careless or reckless operations. Don't, like, you know, fly it into somebody. And they also say you should maintain visual line of sight. So basically fly it within an area that you can see it. So all that said, they do have some guidelines in place for some legislation to allow people to fly these legally with a certification. But that's probably not going to actually go into effect for another year or two.
So there's currently no certification for a drone pilot?
No, not unless some people that are doing it really seriously are actually getting their private pilot's license so that they can work for Hollywood studios and just kind of have that assurance that everything's going to be legit.
So let's talk as marketers. What's the benefit of having an unmanned aerial system in your repertoire?
So for in terms of video production, you can get some shots that you wouldn't normally get. One, in order to get an aerial shot, in the past you would probably have to hire somebody with a helicopter to get those shots. Now you can do it with a much smaller vehicle, which also lets you get into sort of tighter spaces. You can actually fly these indoors. So if you say you were a manufacturer and you had a warehouse and you wanted to show a walkthrough of the entire place, you can actually fly this thing inside and get shots from up high, down low, nice sweeping shots, all kind of dynamic movements that you can do with it.
And so even though you never hear this on the actual videos from drones, these things are crazy loud, right?
They are. So one of the things that the public is kind of concerned with is privacy. And although that's a valid concern, their first concern should be safety for the reasons I mentioned earlier. In reality, if somebody is spying on you with a drone, you're going to hear it. You're going to hear it coming. Like, if somebody wants to spy on you, they have better luck hiding in the bushes with a long lens camera.
Not that we have experience with anything like that.
You know, one of the things you just mentioned is about, you know, sweeping shots of a warehouse space, for example. Is that something you have to kind of practice? I mean, it seems like that would be really complicated, right? Because you're flying this thing, you're controlling the camera, like you're trying to get a nice smooth motion. That's all done through a remote control, right?
Yeah, a couple points there. One, you know, the software on these makes them actually pretty easy to fly with and not crash. But to get nice dynamic movement, it takes a lot of practice and coordination. They just told us to like circle and orbit a subject with the drone, and you know, you have to coordinate your left and right hands just perfectly, and they're very sensitive. You know, the slightest movement and it's just gonna like jet away. Especially if you are flying it indoors and you don't have that much space, you don't want to fly into a wall or a ceiling or something. They do take practice.
And you were telling us off the air that a Hollywood production usually have a crew of two or three driving a drone.
Right. So yeah, in kind of the ideal situation is you actually have three people on a crew that's working with these. One person that's the pilot and controlling the actual movement of the craft. One person that's controlling the camera, and potentially somebody that's also a ground spotter. So if you are going to fly it kind of far away where you're not going to be able to see it, you might have somebody that's you know, in that area and talking to you via walkie-talkie and just kind of guiding you. So they are kind of complicated to control the camera and the motion of the craft at the same time. So there are models that allow for two operators, and that, you know, it's for that reason. So each person can concentrate on their own task.
And then like a fourth guy to fire the missiles, right?
There's no missiles.
Disappointing. All right. So final thoughts, drones, Justin?
You know, I need a drone. How much do these things cost?
Well, I actually had one in my hand that was like smaller than the palm of my hand. That was $30.
What?
So really? Obviously that one was just a toy. It didn't have a camera. But, you know, typically like kind of a starter drone, as I would call it, you're probably looking at about $1,500, all the way up to many thousands if you want something that's going to carry a really heavy camera.
So do most of these drones come with camera?
Some of them do. You kind of have the option of getting, you know, a smaller one that actually has a built-in camera, or a bigger one that's going to fly like a DSLR or some sort of cinema camera.
So personally, I'm really interested to see where the law takes drone usage in the near future. I mean, I know that at federal monuments and parks, you're not allowed to fly drones in them. They've outlawed them. I suspect that there'll be a lot of legislation in the near future about where you can and can't fly these things and the certifications you need. So, Matt, final thoughts?
So, yeah, just one other note is that, you know, in addition to just kind of cinema and film usage, there's actually a whole other market that drones are good for, and that's surveying, law enforcement, search and rescue, places where you wouldn't necessarily want to send a person. You can send these, I've also heard them called aerial robots. So you can send one of these up to inspect an icy roof instead of an insurance agent. I've seen, I know Domino's in the UK has delivered a pizza with a drone, and Amazon is looking to deliver packages with drones. So many uses for these things.
All right. Flying robots coming soon to a future near you. All right. So that's it for us. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you purchase your fine podcasts. You can tweet us questions or topics for future podcasts at ThunderTech on Twitter. And you can always reach us at our website, thundertech.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody.